You are listening to the News Project podcast for the week of November 8th, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Visiting with a 98-year-old veteran. Journey inside an animal cell. And housing planned for a parking lot.
I'm on TV now or whatever.
Yes, you are, sir.
Okay.
It's called a hot mic.
I was born and raised in Bennington, in Vermont. And
what's your name? I forgot.
Gideon. A stands for Amy. And the name translated means Gideon loves the cross. You got that? That's a mouthful.
That's a mouthful.
Okay.
And your last name?
LaCroix. L-A. That's a French name. And my descendants came down from Canada years ago and settled in Bennington. And I grew up in Bennington. And I still have a sister living in Bennington, she turned 90 yet?
No.
Not 90, okay.
So she's a young whippersnapper.
That's if you can call her that. That's a good definition. I'm a descendant of grandparents who immigrated from Canada in an area called Three Rivers, Trois Rivières. And they migrated down to Bennington from Canada and settled in Bennington, where I was born and raised.
And you've lived here all your life, or have you traveled around?
With the exception of the war years, I've lived in this area, originally from Bennington, but as time passed, I bought this place. My working career was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I was associated with the steel industry in Pittsburgh. So my industrial career, where I became a vice president of the company, was in Pittsburgh. And then I moved here in 1985, wasn't it, Chris?
Yep.
Yeah. So I when I left Pittsburgh, I settled right here in Arlington and bought this particular property in 1985.
So Gideon, does that mean you like snow or you hate snow?
Hate snow or like snow?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was...
Which is it?
I was an inveterate skier and spent most of my... on the mountain. I had a membership at Stratton Mountain for... several years until I think I was still skiing at age 82.
The war, how old were you when you went into the service?
How old was I?
Yeah.
Well, I was pretty young when I got involved in the war. I joined the Marines, and I was living in Vermont, and I had to go to Pittsfield to the recruiting office in Bennington, Vermont. They're not in... from Bennington to Pittsfield, where the Marine Corps had a recruiting station.
Were you 18, 19?
Well, yeah, I was old enough so that I was... my father had to sign the papers.
Gotcha.
So I was about 18.
Gotcha.
My father had to authorize my joining Marines. And he was a little reluctant because... my father also served in the armed forces in World War I and was in France. And went through several battles in France in World War I. So he was a little reluctant when I mentioned the Marine Corps because he felt the Marines he was exposed to in World War I had undergone too many hardships.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was reluctant, but he said, "It's your life, and if you want to join the Marines," he says, "I'll sign the papers."
Gideon, was your dad right?
Yes, Dad was absolutely right in all his advice. When did I realize it?
He was right.
As soon as I hit boot camp in North Carolina. He was absolutely right.
Was boot camp one of the most physically demanding things you'd ever tried to do?
It was up until that time. I went overseas out of San Diego, California, on a what you call a converted banana boat. A converted banana boat, single file, going out through the South Pacific. Like most Marines, I didn't know where the hell we were going.
Right.
But we ended up in New Zealand, and then I became involved with all the activities of the Marine Corps out in the South Pacific, and I was in the South Pacific for 38 months. 38 months I was out in that place. I was from Guadalcanal, which was the big invasion base.
Gotcha.
I wasn't from Guadalcanal all the way up to the end of the war. I was out in the South Pacific. I guess you could say I was one of the gung-ho Marines.
Yeah.
All out, you know. You don't spend 38 months out in the South Pacific without having been exposed to several invasions.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about invasions of all kinds, including Saipan, Tinian, Guadalcanal, everywhere. 38 through 3, wow. A little over 3 years. I was a scout, and I was going out in front of the troops as a scout.
All alone.
I was in all the big battles of the South Pacific.
Yeah.
Saipan, Tinian, Guam, Iwo Jima. I witnessed both flag raisings on Iwo Jima and saw those flag raisings. I told my command to go after because we were preparing for the invasion of Japan, the homeland. And by that time, I was the head of the intelligence section in that particular 1st Battalion Intelligence, 3rd Marine Division. And as a result, they wanted me to go in to the homeland, and I said, I want no part of it. The war's over. I want to just get home and resume my life.
Yeah. And they let you?
Pardon?
And they said, okay.
Absolutely. Well, they didn't have much choice. They developed a point system for discharging personnel, and I had enough points so I could be sent back to the States.
Right.
And I was sent back to the States and landed in San Francisco. And from there on in, from San Francisco back to North Carolina, where I was discharged.
And from there, where did you go?
Pardon?
Where did you go once you were discharged? Was it...
After I was discharged, I came back to Bennington. The first thing I had to do, you know, I had a girlfriend that lived in Bennington. She was my childhood sweetheart growing up in Bennington. So when we were married and she was with me at Middlebury College, he was conceived in Middlebury. He was. So
For the folks at home, he's smiling over there. Chris is smiling.
Technically, that makes me a Vermonter.
That's right, Chris.
So
after all these years, the memories of your war years, are they as clear as day, or have they begun to fade with time?
Oh, well, the war years, that's something that's very easy to shed, the feeling what you went through. You realize you're fortunate enough to have survived the war.
Were there any good times about the war, or does that not exist, that idea?
I don't think there are any good times in war.
Got it. Yeah.
There's no good times. War is vicious. It's just terrible. People being killed and, all around you. Watching those flags go up on Iwo Jima. Every time that flag, there's one hanging right out here right now. I have the greatest respect for the flag of the United States of America. Next year is 99. And the year after is the century mark. So if I can survive those periods, hopefully I can make it. Two more years.
What's inside the cell of an animal? To find out, sixth graders at the Dorset School took not only the traditional scientific approach, but also teamed up with the school's art department to get a sense of what goes on inside those microscopically small entities that, just like in human beings, form the building blocks of who we are. If you'd wandered around to the back of the Dorset School recently, you would have found this geodesic dome that allowed you to wander inside and get an up-close look at what makes up an animal cell, complete with QR codes that, with your cell phone, no pun intended, you can get more information. We'll let some of the students in Carly Love's science class and school superintendent Randy Lowe, who happened to be stopping by for a visit, take it from there.
Have it in photo mode.
Okay, so I'll show you, Mr. McGeever, that if I put this in the camera, so I haven't learned about the mitochondria yet. So
you don't want to be recording.
Right, you can record, because you can watch. So if I do this, then I'm scanning the QR code, and then I can open it up. And the students have recorded.
Hello. Welcome to the mitochondria. The mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
The mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell because it releases energy. The mitochondria is like the engine of a vehicle.
So every part of the cell has a QR code attached to it, and the students narrated so that anybody's walking through here, they can learn about the different parts of the cell.
So on the other side of the QR codes, we have like a picture for like younger grades, so like a simple sentence so they can understand.
I wonder how the cell knows the difference between what can be reused here through a lysosome.
The project gave the students a chance to explore cellular structure, not only outside in the cellular geodesic dome, but inside in class.
Very first time I introduced this unit to this group, we watched this video. And you guys remember how we were feeling afterwards?
We were like,
six ways to know you're alive for sure. Living things have cells. They use stinking eye to maintain homeostasis. They have DNA. They reproduce. They live, thrive, and die.
Hey yo, first things first. There's three different types of living things on the earth. You heard? There's organisms with one cell. Its life functions are performed by organelles. And green plants use photosynthesis. And chloroplast converts sunlight and lives with it. And last are the animals. Listen, cells, tissue, organ to organ system. And they're unique, I can't lie, homes. Only animal cells contain lysosomes. But all cells contain ribosomes. They make proteins, the building blocks, I suppose. Yo, but don't get caught slipping on the oils and the fats, aka the lipids.
The project was launched as a collaborative effort between art teacher David Paulberg-Vom and science teacher Carly Love. Mr. Paulberg-Vom, or Mr. PK, as he's better known around the Dorset School, explains how it got started.
As educators, we know that cross-curricular connections are one of the best ways to sort of cement student learning. And I think that coupled with the idea that, you know, coming back from a sort of a remote experience last year with COVID, you know, we wanted to try and build, you know, build community and help with sort of social emotional learning and get the kids in sixth grade to really be striving to do something as a group and as a team. And I think that, you know, we also realized that, you know, middle school kids at that age kind of respond to a spectacle, you know, that something, a sort of a big project that gets people's attention, that has them doing things that are unique and, I don't know, noteworthy within the community. You know, you get all the little kids being really curious about what they're doing. That gets the middle school kids excited, and they want to explain it, and they want to share that experience with the younger kids, and they think it's cool. You know, they think it's cool to be part of something that has people turning their heads.
And after her class, Ms. Love talked a little some more about the project.
My assignment for teaching changed this year, and I'm reintegrated into the sixth grade curriculum as the science and math teacher, and I knew that cell structure and function was part of the sixth grade science curriculum. And so early on during our BRSU teacher professional development days before the school year started, Dave and I were in a BRSU meeting, and sort of at a transition time, I nudged him and I said, "Hey, PK, I've got this crazy science teacher art project pipe dream, and I want to make a macroscopic cell that the kids can walk into." And he was like, "I totally am picking up what you're throwing down." He was like, "Let me think about it and we'll talk more." The next day we had another meeting, and he was like, "I've been thinking about it all night. We can do it in the workshop space. I can have the kids create the sculptures. We'll do some of the sculpting parts and planning out a project." So it really started before the school year. And unfortunately, Dave and I don't get a lot of common time together. So it was in between passing and trying to catch each other at lunch, or going for a hike out in the woods together, and just kind of brainstorming and coming up with our ideas.
So did they have like a separate work component to all of this, as well as
I believe so. Yeah, there's some visual arts standards that are more specific to visual art representation. Sculpting is part of what they need to do, and planning and executing a project through, which is one of our transferable skills, is being responsible for our learning and showing that we can make a plan and communicate that with our classmates and with our teachers and our groups.
We always knew those tiny microorganisms were busy places, but thanks to the integrated art and science approach, the sixth graders at Dorset School now have an even better appreciation about that. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Housing has long been identified as one of Vermont's most important challenges. There simply isn't enough of it, either already existing or being built at prices low and middle-income people, in particular, can afford. Reasons for that have included things like the cost of land, the cost of labor and materials, and the permitting process. A housing summit recently held in Arlington delved deep into all of these factors to try and find some potential solutions or pathways forward. One local housing project that's getting attention in Manchester and was discussed also at the housing summit in Arlington is one proposed on Depot Street, near the corner of Center Hill Street. There, three commercial buildings front a site which is now mostly a parking lot, on town-owned property where, in 2023, a project to create about 40 residences is under consideration. We met up with town manager John O'Keefe, who described what's one of Manchester's most promising prospects at making a dent in the housing crunch in town.
We've already done a lot of studies on this property to figure out what to do. In one of the major proposals, at least in the back part and possibly in the front, is housing. Downtown housing, it's on water, it's on sewer, electrical data, internet, it's all here. And this parcel is kind of sandwiched between Depot Street, which is a major roadway, and a secondary, what we call a Class 2 roadway, Center Hill. The other sort of landmarks that people might recognize on this side of the property, call that the west side, is the Price Chopper Plaza, and the parcel over here is Manchester House of Pizza, Starbucks, Subway, Pendleton, and the Body Lab gym. So it's kind of a central location, and it's a great opportunity for the community. And so the select board has formed a committee of select board members, residents, and town employees to work on this particular project. We've also obligated $100,000 of town funds to actually hire somebody to help the town put together a redevelopment plan here. So something that's really going to pop here soon, partly because we're putting a lot of emphasis into it, and also because, you know, it's an emerging opportunity.
So would the housing project include these three buildings here that face Depot Street, or would they remain as commercial buildings?
We don't know yet. We did do a study, and it does indicate that these would be practical sites for housing. It is closer to the road. You know, it's a Class 1 state highway. We're also looking at this site for office buildings. Some people have suggested moving Town Hall back down here. There's other opportunities with the private sector to put 9-to-5 office workers in this area. There's a lot of good data about economic development in locating businesses downtown, like office-based businesses, insurance, finance, things like that. So we're not sure yet. Another proposal is to do housing upstairs and in some kind of mixed use downstairs. And then you can see actually right here, there's a little bump out on this parcel. And you could even do some small retail down here, like a gift shop, coffee shop, ice cream shop, things like that. But I think generally speaking, the emphasis is off of retail, because we've got a lot of retail in this particular area, and it's more towards mixed use and definitely housing.
Then we headed up to the other side of the parking lot, where much of the new housing would be constructed.
Based on the preliminary study that we did with Burke and White, the study shows that there's plenty of property down here, especially on the zoning side, in order to build secondary buildings back here. So you can see here, there's 1, 2, 3 buildings. There's a lot of parking here. This was built when Manchester required more parking. So some of the parking is going to have to exist or be maintained, but this whole site back through here is kind of what we're talking about as far as housing back here. And there's some thought of connecting Depot Street to Center Hill back here, so that the residents that are living back here have access to, of course, the shopping centers on both sides and all the different businesses on Depot Street, and accessing Depot Street, but also might have access to Center Hill, get up to the farmers market, MEMS, and historic Main Street that way.
So would this be workforce affordable type housing like we've been hearing a lot about, or market housing? What would be the plan?
We're not sure yet. I mean, obviously the focus is going to be on affordable and workforce. Whether the plan would require some market units as well in order to try to finance it, we're not sure yet. That's one reason that the select board has authorized $100,000 to really put together an entire package, an entire deal, find the developers, find the businesses, and actually so that when 2023 hits, we're ready to move.
So you want to have a plan in place for it by April of 23 to, mm-hmm. to, and what would be, if all goes according to plan at that point, then how quickly might that housing be constructed?
Hopefully pretty quickly. I mean, obviously there's a real need for it here. This one is one that we have other properties that we're thinking about, but this is the one that is really coming back to us so quickly. It's the best opportunity. It's an opportunity where the town could make decisions, financial decisions and redevelopment decisions based on not necessarily how much money we could get out of the site. The site is appraised for or assessed for about $2.6 million. But part of the idea is that, we may sacrifice a portion of what we could recover from the site. We've got really nothing into it. One thing that we do have to do is we have to pay off $100,000 related to the installation of an elevator in one of the buildings that came midterm. So there's that cost, but otherwise there's a lot of room here for us to play with different scenarios and ensure that we could do, for example, affordable housing in here.
Seth Bongartz, one of Manchester State Representatives, and one of the organizers of the recent housing summit in Arlington, has been following the housing issue. He's hopeful the project on Depot Street will be a step forward in addressing housing for middle-income residents in a downtown location, from where people could easily travel to local jobs and services.
It does address it, and of course it doesn't address it anywhere near in total because the need is so huge, but 40 units is 40 units. And I think, you know, while there's still a lot of thinking to be done and work with consultants to figure out the right mix and how to make this thing pencil, but the idea is to have a mixed use, a mixed income project would have everything from some technically low-income housing to where I think a lot of us in this area recognize is the even bigger need, perhaps, if it's hard to say that, but of sort of middle-income housing, or the missing middle, as people call it, and maybe even some truly market-rate housing, but to have a mix that just helps a little bit take the pressure off and maybe can serve as a model for doing more in other places down the road. And this is one of those cases where everything kind of comes together in a way that is perhaps unique, but it's an opportunity. You know, the infrastructure is there, the parking, the entrance, the town sewer and water. The town actually owns the land, which provides a huge added impetus to making it happen on this site. And it's a site that can accommodate something with a number of units. And the more units you build together, the less expensive the overall cost.
In less than 18 months, by April of 2023, we'll have a clearer idea if this will be making a difference. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.